From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it is time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. This winter greatly surpassed the average temperature and snowfall figures for Kentucky. I'm told that the average temperature is in the range of 35 degrees, snowfall about 11 inches, although we have experts who will make sure that these statistics, these numbers are correct during today's show. We're hoping to hear from you who've survived this winter so far. If you have questions about climate change worldwide, or more specifically in the Commonwealth, do you want to know about terms such as the polar vortex, El Nino, the jet stream, etc.? We hope to talk about those things. And we'd like to have your stories, personal stories of weather. Anyone who's lived for very long, especially in this region of the country, has had, I'm sure, some interesting experiences of weather. We've had some interesting experiences just this week. And on the day of our live program on Thursday, the forecast is, to say the least, interesting. With us today to discuss these issues are Tony Edwards, forecaster for the Jackson station of the National Weather Service. Tony is a recipient of the agency's Regional Isaac M. Klein Award for 2007. He's recognized for outstanding achievement in the hydrometeorology. Wish I could edit. That category for creation and development of the drought program at the Jackson Forecast Office and his contributions to the local fire weather program. Tony, thanks for making the trek up here to Richmond from Jackson this morning.
Good to be here.
And also with us on the line, we have from his home in Lexington, Trent Garrison. Trent is professor of geology at Eastern Kentucky University and also past president of the American Institute of Professional Geologists. And Trent, thank you so much for being part of our show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Let me just very quickly ask you, Trent, to start things off by why a geologist when we talk about global climate change? I know you have a great interest in this topic, and we're very grateful for you making yourself available. I wouldn't think of geology when I think in terms of weather and climate change.
Well, that's a very fair question to ask, I think. So to understand weather and climate are two different things. So, you know, to understand weather, you probably wouldn't ask a geologist. But to understand climate, I think it's important to look back at past climate. So the important question to ask then is, how do we interpret those data? So geologists gather data from ice cores, fossil data, rock and mineral data, astronomy trends, and that's how you gather information to reconstruct past climates.
Hmm.
So it's in the realm of geology, I would argue.
So we've got both sides covered here. Tony, let's talk about how you define weather and actually the role of the National Weather Service.
I work out of the Jackson office of the National Weather Service. There's actually 122 Weather Service offices all over the country. So we focus on Eastern Kentucky and Jackson, 33 counties there. And basically, if you hear a warning, a tornado warning, a severe thunderstorm warning, flash flood warning, that comes from your local National Weather Service office. You know, a lot of people get their weather forecast information from media and other sources, but any warning comes from your local National Weather Service office. And we typically deal with weather that's going to impact us over the next few days up to a week in time. So we tend to deal with the here and now and weather impacts that are going to face us in the near future. And sometimes we dabble into 2 weeks ahead. There are specialists in D.C. that focus on trying to forecast the climate and where we're going to go into the future. But here at our local office, we focus on what's going to impact us in the near future.
Well, let's dive right into our promoted topic for the show. This has been kind of a wild and crazy winter. Agreed, Tony?
Yeah, what's made it so wild and crazy is the fact that we haven't really had a winter in so long. You know, if you really look back at the statistics and try to quantify the winter so far, I call it just a good old-fashioned winter here in Kentucky. You know, it's been almost 20 years since we've had a good, cold, snowy winter. And up until about 1996, they were pretty regular. One of the statistics that we look at a lot is below zero temperatures. This winter, we had several bouts of below zero temperatures, especially in the month of January. And up until 1996, it used to be a regular occurrence around here to get 5 below, 10 below, even 15 below zero every few winters. So What's made it really so abnormal is the fact that we just hadn't had a winter in so long.
So we got spoiled by the last few winters. I know the last couple of winters seemed to be especially mild.
Yeah, they were. Back in 2009, 2010, we had a pretty good cool winter and a lot of snow. I think we averaged over 50 inches of snow for the winter at our office in Breathitt County. So, but other than that, really, 94, 96, those were our last really good, abnormally cold winters.
Let's turn to our geologist, our climate specialist, Trent Garrison. Trent, where does this winter fit into that picture as we discuss global climate change? And I guess, is that the same thing as global warming?
Well, global climate change and global warming, that's a good question. So there are different terms that are thrown around. I'll just answer that first.
Okay.
There's global warming, global climate change, and the greenhouse effect. So this may be old knowledge for a lot of people, but I think it's important to go through it really quickly. So with respect to the greenhouse effect, I like to use the analogy in my class that you're sitting in a greenhouse, the sun is shining through the glass at the top of the greenhouse, and the sun comes down through the glass because it's transparent. It gets absorbed by plants and whatever else is in the greenhouse, and it gets re-radiated, if you will, at a different wavelength. So that different wavelength can't get out of the greenhouse. So that's the greenhouse effect. We've known about that for a long time, the early 1800s. A lot of people have done experiments of, well-known scientific idea. So that's analogous to the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere here on Earth. It's not a perfect analogy, but we'll use that. So the sun comes down through the atmosphere, which we focus on carbon dioxide. There are other greenhouse gases, but we like to focus on carbon dioxide because it's the most abundant. So the sunlight comes down, gets re-radiated at a different wavelength, and it gets stuck depending on how much carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases we have in our atmosphere. So that's overall, that could be called global warming. And global climate change is it's caused by global warming, and it's I think there's a misinterpretation of that sometimes. So global warming doesn't mean that every day is going to be warmer than the previous day. It can lead to global climate change, which means there's maybe more extreme weather in one area, maybe hot, maybe cold, maybe a drought, whatever. But those terms are sometimes confused. So I like to refer to it as global climate change.
Right.
And as far as your, what was your second
question? Yeah, and actually that my first question, which of course I complicated by doubling up on the question here, Trent, where does this winter fit in? Is this winter, this crazy weather we've experienced this winter, is it related to global climate change? Is this an example of the catastrophic effects of climate change?
Well, I think you have to be careful to relate one single weather event or one winter to an overall pattern. And it's certainly a fair question. And certainly people have already looked at this. I was just looking at articles last night about this. But I would say that it's too early to say that one cold winter is indicative of an overall pattern. It's kind of like I referred to earlier, there's a difference between weather and climate. So climate is more or less what I like to look at. And over time, have we seen changes in climate patterns? So that's the question I like to ask. I think we have seen changes in overall climate patterns, but I'm very cautious to say that one snowfall or a few really warm winters are indicative of a major change or anything like that.
And Tony Edwards, the same question for you. How do you respond to people when they say, is this winter weather related to global warming?
Well, I agree with Trent. You can't look at one winter or one storm. A lot of people after Sandy made landfall, they were drawing implications into global climate change. But when taken over the course of a long period of time and big changes, that's where you start talking about climate change. And I like to tell people a personal experience when we're talking about climate change. I'm from East Tennessee, and I grew up in East Tennessee. Well, I got a job in the National Weather Service, and I was sent to Barrow, Alaska. And if you take out a map of the United States, you see Alaska, look at the far northern tip of Alaska, and that's Barrow. And I lived there for 6 months, and then I transferred to Fairbanks. And what I saw up in Alaska was really striking to me. And one of the biggest examples of what I like to draw attention to is the fact that the Inuit people, the Eskimos up there, they did not have a word for thunder in their language.
Why? Because they didn't have any thunder?
Never had thunder. Never had a reason to speak of it. However, in the past 20, 30 years or so, they've been getting thunderstorms up there.
Uh-oh.
And I can remember the summer of 2004 watching a line of thunderstorms move off the Arctic Ocean impact the city of Barrow. So that is an instance where you can say, hey, something's going on there. Now, that's one small area of the country, but the whole state of Alaska, a lot of forests are being devastated by invasive species because the winters don't get cold enough to kill off the bugs. So you can look at things like that, you look at things going on in other countries and kind of piece them together, and yeah, you can say, hey, something's going on, something is changing, but some areas of the world may be actually cooling. So when you look at it all together, you have to look over past and bring in a lot of years together to see if the climate's changing. You can't just look at one event or one winter.
One of the things we hear about, and both of you are welcome to chime in on this in the minute and a half we have before taking a station break, the melting of the polar ice caps. How do we know that's happening? Is that happening? And to what extent?
Well, we've got satellite observations of the ice pack up in the north and the North Pole and the Arctic Ocean that go back into about the late 70s, if my memory is correct. So we can quantify how much the ice pack has shrunk or grown. And now, there's yearly fluctuations in that, but there has been a minimum over the past few years in the ice pack extent. But like I said, we've only got real accurate observations back 30, 40 years, so we don't really know if this is just a normal trend that takes place or if there is more to it.
And Trent Garrison, in about a minute, we've saw the Al Gore movie, An Inconvenient Truth, and talked about all the catastrophic things that are going to happen as a result of the melting and the warming. Does that ring true to you?
Well, global climate change has occurred in the geologic past, and it's something that I hope to talk about on the program. I know we don't have time right now. But, we've observed, not observed as far as in terms of humans, but we've seen through interpretations of the ice and rock records that we've gone through extensive climate change in the past. The question is, though, the amount of greenhouse gases that we've put into the atmosphere in the last 160 years
Let's come back to that, Trent Garrison.
Okay.
And we have Tony Edwards with us from the Weather Service. We're talking about the weather, 800-621-8890. You're welcome to get on board. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That number again, 800-621-8890. Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, live on a Thursday morning, inviting you to participate in our conversation about the weather, global climate change, polar vortex. We haven't even talked about polar vortex yet. Need to learn more about that. But we have with us Tony Edwards of the National Weather Service Jackson Bureau, and also with us Trent Garrison, professor of geology at Eastern Kentucky University, and past president of the American Geological Association?
American Institute of Professional Geologists, Kentucky section.
Thank you, Trent. Let me pick back up with you, Trent Garrison, talking about the projected catastrophic events that we may remember from a few years ago when a former vice president of the United States was talking about the effects of global climate change. So where are we headed in terms of those catastrophic events? So this winter storm this year, and the fact that, for instance, on this very day, we're expecting severe storms across sections of Kentucky, that's not tied to such events?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that, climate, like I was saying earlier, climate change is, it occurs. We've observed through the rock record and through ice core data, that we've reconstructed past climates going back very, very well, I think, past 600,000 years, and even going back millions and hundreds of millions of years using other types of data. So we have a good idea of how climate has changed in the past. And we know it's changing now, and no matter what we do, it's going to change. But the question I think a lot of people have is anthropogenic additions to the atmosphere. When I say anthropogenic, I'm referring to human-caused or human-released greenhouse gases into the atmosphere in the last 160 or so years. How much of that is adding to climate change? Is that adding to climate change?
And your opinion?
I think it's adding to climate change. I think it's exacerbating it, at least some, but I certainly am, you know, I'm not expert enough to give you an estimated percentage or anything like that as far as how much we are exacerbating the problem.
I know you talked about the greenhouse effect and carbon dioxide amounts in the air, and it's been a few years now since we basically did away with aerosol spray cans and products that supposedly were harmful to the environment. They changed the gas that goes into the air conditioners as a result of concerns for the environment. Is that still scientifically valid? Was that a smart move?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And what you're referring to are CFCs and things of that nature, and those are related to the hole in the ozone. And the hole in the ozone and global climate change are, maybe somewhat related, but those are two somewhat different issues.
Wow. Okay.
So, I think it's a good thing that we reduced our aerosol contamination, CFCs. I think that's certainly something that we needed to do.
Trent Garrison is with us. He is a geologist and expert in climate, and we have with us Tony Edwards of the National Weather Service. We do want to let you know you can get on the line at 800-621-8890 with your question or even personal story about the weather during today's Eastern Standard. Been kind of a rough winter so far. We're going to ask our experts if we have a projection for what's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. That's your job, Tony, forecasting. So we're going to ask you for that. 800-621-8890 is the number we're inviting you to call in today. Send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. If you post on the WEKU Facebook page or send us a tweet, we'll consider your comments for use on the air as well. That phone number, 800-621-8890. And actually, let me get another definition out here. We're trying to get all of our terms defined eventually, but polar vortex. Tony Edwards of the Weather Service. I feel like this year is the first time I've ever heard that term, polar vortex. Where did that come from? What's it all about?
The polar vortex. Social media is a great thing, but sometimes it's a not so good thing. The polar vortex has always been there. It makes periodic visits down into southern Canada, even the northern United States. It has done that in the past frequently, but for some reason it caught on this year.
And what is it? I mean, a vortex sounds to me like a tornado spinning around.
Right. You can kind of think of it like a big hurricane. The way the wind patterns circulate around in the northern, up around the North Pole usually. It's just an area of low pressure in the mid-levels of the atmosphere, and most people, well, you can associate cold air with that. And that polar vortex will ebb and flow. It'll move from one side of the pole, maybe over Siberia for a while, and then it'll get shoved around. The atmosphere is kind of like a river, so it'll flow with the flow in the atmosphere. And this winter, the weather patterns were just able to knock it down into Canada. Now, there's pieces of the polar vortex. Sometimes it's one main feature. Other times, there'll be four or five little polar vortexes all over the northern hemisphere. It's always been there. You know, it'll come and make visits again. But when it does get shoved to the south, that's when we do get the cold air outbreaks and the Arctic air masses like we did have this year. But it's nothing new.
Over the past weekend, NPR had a story that they certainly posted on their website. Mm-hmm. Warming Arctic may be causing jet stream to lose its way. Is that what we're talking about?
Right, the jet stream. The jet stream is like a river of air in the atmosphere. Again, the atmosphere is a fluid, basically. It acts just like the creek in your backyard or the river, just in a big scale. So there's streams of air where the air flows really quickly, and that transports weather systems across the globe. And so when the jet stream dips to the south, which it did frequently this past winter and will continue to do, that's when we get cold. Now, what happens is you get patterns that set up in the atmosphere that kind of drive where that jet stream is going to go. One of the patterns we look at is called the North Atlantic Oscillation, which is a big term, but it just basically is telling you what's going on in the Northern Atlantic. When you get high pressure setting up over Greenland, that high pressure up to the north forces everything to the west of it to kind of back up and slow down. And so cold air tends to dump down into Canada and the northern U.S. So what's going on in different parts of the globe drives what's going on here locally in eastern Kentucky. It's like a river. One thing happens in the North Pacific, it's going to drive what happens downstream over North America.
There are skeptics who do not believe that global climate change is occurring or consider it part of the natural flow of events. Mm-hmm. Let me start with Trent Garrison. Why are folks skeptical about this? Do you identify with that? Is there reason for skepticism?
Maybe it's our fault as scientists that we haven't done enough public education and you know, that sort of thing. I think part of it stems from people don't want to believe it. So if you don't want to believe something, then it isn't true, right? So, but I would make the argument that there's at this point you could make that argument, a few decades ago, but now if you really start looking at the data, there's been an incredible amount of data, and our computer models have gotten better. We've increased the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from 280 back in the mid-1800s to around 400 parts per million now, and it's the highest it's been in 30-some million years. So, we know that carbon dioxide and temperature are related. So all we have to do is do simple laboratory experiments, look at the planet Venus. It has what's known as a runaway greenhouse effect. The temperatures there are about 850 degrees more than they should be Fahrenheit because of they have mostly carbon dioxide atmosphere, which our atmosphere on Earth has changed over time too. We have more oxygen now than we used to, and we used to have more carbon dioxide. So I suppose I would recommend them to look at the data. There was a recent poll that was done between 97 and 98, I think it was 97.2%. I was just looking at that study last night after I found out I was going to be on the show today. there was a study done last year by a guy by the name of John Cook and several other authors on the paper, where they analyzed about somewhere between 12 and 13,000 climate articles on researching global climate change in the last 20 years. And of all of those articles, the ones that said something about anthropogenic climate change was, I'm looking it up now, it's 97.2% of those. So, it's a really, really small minority of climate scientists who don't accept anthropogenic global climate change at this point. Not to say that we know exactly what's going on, but even though we don't know exactly what's going on or exactly what it's going to be like 50 years down the road, that doesn't mean that it's not occurring, at least to some degree.
It's a matter of observation. Tony Edwards of the Weather Service. Does the Weather Service take a position on climate change?
Well, as far as the National Weather Service goes, like I said, we kind of deal in the here and now, and there are climate specialists in Washington, D.C. that work for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and they look more into those kind of issues, and certainly they, they're actively researching this because, policy is being made based on these studies and these ideas. So, but myself and our Bureau of the National Weather Service, we don't, we're not tasked with that kind of thing to do, to look forward that far in the future.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We are talking weather. We're talking global climate change, polar vortex. What's going on? What's with this crazy winter weather we've had this year? Your questions, your comments, your stories are invited, 800-621-8890. You are welcome to send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post on the Facebook page. Send us a tweet. Again, that number, 800-621-8890. Waiting patiently on the line is Don in Lexington. We hope you're still there. Don, are you there?
I'm still here.
All right, go right ahead with your question or comment, Don.
Well, there's another term called climate change deniers, and there may be skeptics in that bunch that are sincere, but I think it's tactically a measure being used by some to create questions and not answers. And they are called climate change deniers. I have two questions before I'll make some comments and observations. First, you mentioned greenhouse gases. Are all greenhouse gases caused by fossil fuel burning? And second, is there not a conference next week, I think, of a group dealing with this climate change issue at the University of Kentucky, climatologists or politicians or somebody? I'm not sure if either of you are participants in that. I'd like to know. Now, my comments.
Let me get an answer. Don, just hold on there. Let me get an answer to that question. Tony, Trent?
You want me to answer it?
Sure, yeah. Trent, go ahead.
Okay. Greenhouse gases from fossil fuels. A lot of greenhouse gases, most greenhouse gases that contribute to global climate change are considered carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide comes from cars and trucks, coal-fired power plants, natural gas, and stationary combustion of oil as well. Now, methane is another greenhouse gas, and methane comes from some interesting sources. From cow stomachs. it comes from that. It also comes from coal, for example. It comes from obviously natural gas of hydraulic fracturing, that sort of thing. And there's also nitrogen. The nitrogen oxides, and those come from similar sources, including anthropogenic fertilizer.
Okay.
So those are the
causes, or those are the sources.
That's right.
Okay, Don, go right ahead. You had a comment. Let's keep it brief, please, so we can move on.
Well, that raises a question I need to know about fossil fuels that you're referring to, carbon gases that I don't really know about. The comments I had was years ago I heard a geographer at UK accidentally talk about the severity of storms in the future, and this was 10 years ago, and she basically showed what was problematic all over the world, including the energy burning spots that are obviously hot by looking back at the Earth with whatever cameras they are. Second, the comment that I had was yesterday I was listening. The energy obesity of this nation is a serious problem, and waste is so common. And with the increase of international populations and their equality demands to have these consumer goods, I am seriously afraid that we may be on the point of no return, but I am also hopeful that we stop this damaging effect of whatever it is we're doing to the Earth as mankind, including eating of cattle, which obviously create methane.
All right. Don, thank you so much for being part of the show today with your questions and your comment. We'll get some reactions from our guests, Trent Garrison and Tony Edwards. We do have a line open for you, 800-621-8890. Your question, your comment, your personal story about the weather. I'm sure someone out there has an interesting story about your experience of weather. 800-621-8890. Tony Edwards, any reaction to Don's comments about, he's calling it energy obesity?
You know, I can't speak towards that.
It's a little political.
It does, and it's outside of my area of expertise. But what I can speak to, and I think it's really good that Trent is on here. He looks more at the past, and I look more towards the future. And I think I can speak to some of the. I think he called them climate deniers, and very few people deny that the climate is changing. Like Trent said, it's whether we're involved or not is the big question. And believe it or not, a lot of meteorologists do not believe in anthropogenic global warming. And it's because of the fact that we have such a hard time forecasting the weather for 7 days into the future. And we rely on computer models heavily in forecasting just for 7 days. And so a lot of the problem with meteorologists is that, well, our computer models are so faulty looking ahead a week in advance. When you start looking at decades and you know, up to a century into the future and trying to forecast the effect on the planet, that's where we kind of have a hard time trying to figure that much confidence in that.
Now that you bring that topic up, and we have a minute before another station break here, but let me put you on the spot here, Tony. Prediction, forecast, you can't predict more than 7 days, but what do you think about what's going to happen for the rest of this winter or this coming spring? We've had a really rough winter. We're going to have an extra mild and really warm and nice spring and summer?
Well, there's good news there. The climate patterns that we look at to kind of give us an idea of where we're going into the future are pointing towards a wet spring, but a warmer spring. And when you look at climate patterns, they typically last for about 3 months or so, and then you start to head in the opposite direction. So all signs are pointing to at least a normal to above normal warm spring.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation talking about weather, global climate change, polar vortex. Are there some terms that you would like to have defined? Are there some issues or some observations you have made personally to which you'd like to get an answer? Give us a call during the next segment, during the final segment of today's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You're welcome to send us an email to WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, post on our Facebook page, or send us a tweet, and we'll be glad to try to get an answer for you. We'd be glad to hear your stories about weather and what you've experienced in your life. Some of us have been around for a while, have seen, well, a lot of changes in weather, but is what's happening this year all that unusual, and what does it mean? 800-621-8890. We'll get to your questions, your comments, and your stories in the next segment of Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Weather, climate change, our topic for today's program. 800-621-8890 is the number you are invited to call. With us today, Tony Edwards of the National Weather Service Jackson Bureau, as well as Trent Garrison, a professor of geology at Eastern Kentucky University and expert in climate. And you are welcome to get on board, as has done Carl from Hazard. Let's see if Carl is still on the line. I hope we didn't answer your question already, or if you have any further questions or want a clarification. Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead. I know your question, I'm told, was about the forecast for the spring or summer. What more do you want to know about that?
Pretty much it. I kind of heard you guys talk about that. I love the show. Love hearing you guys. And I got to meet Tony, I believe, about a year or so ago. They came out and were doing some stuff with the National Weather Service, programming some radios and that type thing. And they done a terrific job. I recall back when we had the tornadoes here in Eastern Kentucky, and that was just kind of my question while we were looking at the spring and summer here.
All right, Carl. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show, and thanks for the comment.
Thank you.
800-621-8890 is the phone number. You can write to us at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Now, here's an email from Matt in Richmond. Great chat today. I find it interesting that so many people bring up the unusually cold winter this year as an argument against climate change. Yet when I and many others were growing up, winters like this seemed more common than they have been, thus creating a feel that this winter is highly unusual when just the opposite. As I look at the record book for weather, Lexington's record low was minus 21. This winter never even got close to that. Tony?
Yeah, we, like I said before, we've got climate sites in eastern Kentucky that go back into the late 1800s with reliable data, and it was a normal occurrence to get, take Williamsburg, for example, down near the Tennessee border. It was a normal winter to get below zero, 10, 15 below zero, and in fact, it was odd if you went 3 or 4 years without dropping below zero up until about the mid-90s. And then we've had about 2 decades of warmth. So, right, like I said, this is a good old-fashioned winter that most folks, you know, were used to up until the mid-90s.
Trent Garrison, we have heard that, again, the show is live here on Thursday and gets repeated on Sunday evening, so things may change dramatically before that. But we hear about the potential for storms and warm temperatures of 70 degrees on this Thursday. We also heard that the site of the Winter Olympics, snowy stuff and supposedly ice and cold weather, they're going to have a temperature of 50 degrees today. Is any of that, in your opinion, related to climate change?
It could be, or it may not be. It's really hard for me to say one way or the other. What I can say is I'm pretty confident that over a long term, and I'm talking climate, not weather, climate being, you know, decades, centuries, millennia, that we have seen, we're starting to see a shift already. So I think we've gone from arguing about this back and forth to the point where we realize that we're starting to see changes take place in the climate now. And people are starting to adjust. And if you don't mind, I would like to go back to the caller before the break. He mentioned something about population problem. It's not the exact words he used, but something like that. And something that's interesting, I used to be the energy club advisor for Bluegrass College. And we watched some videos and, you know, learned as much as we could about the global energy crisis and how that's related to climate change and things like that. And a pretty scary statistic is the fact that there are 1.2 billion people on the planet Earth who do not have electricity. And most of these people live in either China, India, or South America, or developing countries. And they will be coming online, and when I say coming online, I mean driving cars, getting access to electricity and things like that in the coming decades. So in the United States, we're pretty advanced as far as, you know, using electricity, and we know we're at the point our carbon dioxide emissions have actually decreased over the past 5 or 6 years or so, which is China passed us up back in 2008. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic that we didn't see coming up. But with that many people going to be using, you know, cars and coal-fired power plants in China, they're building them at a rate of one per week or so in China. So it's not just the United States that has to take action on this issue. It's also other countries.
This is where we get into the realm of international politics and international agreements and so forth.
That's right.
And is that informed by your opinion, Trent, you know, do the policymakers and those, you know, delegates to the United Nations or wherever these discussions are occurring, do they rely on the scientists for this information in order to make those decisions?
I think so, and I believe that the people in China and India and South America will, when they're able to, I think they'll make the, you know, well, I don't want to say right decision, but they will realize that they have to do something to limit their greenhouse gas emissions because, you know, 1.2 billion people, and of course not all those people are going to be coming online, but with that many people and that much more need for electricity and transportation, so forth and so on, that could be a pretty big change into our atmosphere.
This is Eastern Standard. We do have a line open at the moment, 800-621-8890, if you'd like to get on board. But let's go now to Ray from Lexington. Ray, thank you so much for being part of the show. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, first I had a comment. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released a report in late January which designated the fact that the year 1988, which was the warmest at that time, has fallen by the wayside. It's fallen out of the top 20. Now, there's a film I show in class. It's a Nova PBS series film called, from 1989, called Is It Hot Enough For You? And it's based on data from 1980 and concerns, and it's like the infancy, if you would, of coming to grips with what's now called climate change. And one of the problems with the film being that old is they throw around the term greenhouse effect, like it's the same thing. And I tell my students, well, you know, the greenhouse effect is kind of different. We die without it. But the point is that 1988 was the warmest year on record, and here we are 25 years out from that film, and the hottest year at that time has fallen out of the top 20. Now, it's only been 25 years. And that's the point I make to my class, that we had rudimentary knowledge of it then, and we talk about deniers, and we might be a lot farther along were it not for deniers. That's my comment there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your comment, Ray, for being part of today's Eastern Standard. Ray from Lexington, 800-621-8890. Gentlemen, Tony or Trent, a reaction to Ray's comment about fact that we might be further along in making changes if it weren't for the deniers?
Well, you know, that I think that's healthy. To have healthy discourse, healthy arguments for and against a point is healthy. But I think the missing element, which hasn't been brought up yet in the show, maybe Trent can speak to this, maybe not, but the missing element is the sun. You know, the sun really has a large impact on our climate. So, I think that's one thing that we're looking at more now and trying to quantify is the sun's input, and in addition to all the greenhouse gases that we're putting into our atmosphere. But that's one thing that we're kind of trying to figure out. If the sun does go into a minimum, you know, are we going to have a period of cooling, which maybe throws us off for a little bit, you know, and then once the sun gets back active again, we go right back full force into warming again. So there's so many variables out there and so much to try to comprehend. But, you know, to have that discourse, to have everybody arguing about something, I think is healthy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you brought up the sun and sunspots and things like that, because I there's so many things I want to talk about, but I know that we only have a few minutes left. As far as, you know, the things that contribute to climate change over the long term, I think sunspots and sun activity, I think that has something to do with it. But probably the major players are something called the Milankovitch cycles. There was a guy back in the 1930s by the name of Milankovitch who recognized that the circular patterns of the Earth orbiting the Sun versus the elliptical patterns of the Earth versus going around the Sun, that has a frequency of about 100,000 years. So every 100,000 years, you have these really nice graphs, and in between that, you have the tilt of the Earth and the wobble of the Earth, and those are smaller cycles. You also have plate tectonics. You know, where are the continents at any given time? Now, I'm talking really, you know, this is not what short-term. This is a long-term climate change. So all of those things are important in going into understanding the full, what all is going into making up our climate. As far as sunspots and sun cycles, there was a study that was put out by, or not a study, but a graph that was shown by, I believe it was NOAA. And since 1980, it looks like the solar activity has actually decreased quite a bit. And since 1980, the temperature has increased about half a degree Celsius or so. So it looks like that, at least in the last 30 years, that solar activity and temperature have not been as related as they were in the past. And that's kind of an interesting thing. So if anyone wants to look this up, you can search for temperature versus solar activity.
All righty. We have just a few minutes remaining, and, of course, a number of people waiting on the line. Here's an email from Rebecca. Landfills are another key source of methane. Food waste is a key cause of landfill methane. Furthermore, I would say that climate change deniers should hope and pray that climate change is caused by human activities such as burning coal and petroleum, because that means we also have the chance to change our bad behaviors and possibly reverse our impact if indeed it is a natural phenomenon then it is likely beyond our understanding and control. This does not bode well for our civilization's future, at least as we currently live it. Thank you, Rebecca, for your email. Let's go back to the phone and talk to Lloyd from Versailles, who's been on the line for a few minutes. Lloyd, thank you for being part of Eastern Standard. Go right ahead. Are you there, Lloyd?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, go right ahead.
My brother happens to be a meteorologist. He's done a lot of research studies, in fact, one of them here, but most of his work has been on radioactivity and the problems with the different land sites. But he and I were talking at Christmas time about the atmosphere, and he commented that carbon dioxide is only about 3% of our atmosphere. And, of course, we have, like you guys mentioned, methane and nitrogen. But he says the biggest thing up there is a lot of water. And it says we're putting a lot more water up in the atmosphere with, like, the airplanes. And the airplanes, as they fly, they put carbon dioxide and stuff into the air, but they also put water. How does this, is this contributing negatively to our atmosphere? And what are we doing about it, or is it even necessary?
Okay, Tony Edwards of the Weather Service, thank you for your call.
Well, you're correct in that water vapor does constitute a large part of our atmosphere, and it's what drives the weather. And one of the problems is with global climate change is if our Earth does warm, then we're going to be evaporating more water from the oceans, from the lakes and rivers and streams. So there's going to be more water vapor go into the planet. So it's something that we have to definitely look at and be aware of. I don't know, slightly outside my area of expertise, but I don't know how much water vapor, the airplanes and whatnot put into the atmosphere. Maybe Trent can speak on that more, but it is something that does kind of feed back in and of itself. If you have a warming planet, there's going to be more water vapor get into the atmosphere, which does act as a greenhouse gas and does potentially cause even more warming.
Again, Lloyd, thanks for your question from Versailles. Trent, do you have anything more to add about the airplane's contribution of water and vapor to the atmosphere?
I'm really not familiar with that. I know we have lots of water vapor in the atmosphere. When I refer to carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, we refer to the dry greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. What last thing I would like to bring up is, what can we do about it? Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay, I heard a noise. What can we do about this? We have options of just not using any fossil fuels anymore. Well, that's not feasible in a state like Kentucky where we get 93% of our electricity from coal. We could not drive cars anymore, that sort of thing. So as far as the feasible things that can be done, we've been talking about carbon capture and sequestration, and that's the idea of pumping the carbon dioxide back underground. And Kentucky has actually been a state that has been pretty active in these types of research.
And how, is that moving forward? Is that something that is going to happen? Or what is that research bringing about?
I think it's yet to be seen. Globally, we've spent billions of dollars. I think I looked it up a few years ago, and it was $15 billion on carbon capture and storage and sequestration. And if there's a law that says we can only emit so much carbon dioxide from power plants, then certainly that's something that we'll have to look into. And that's been thrown around a little bit, but yet to be seen how that plays out geopolitically.
Okay, I think we have time for at least one more caller, so let's go ahead and bring Dan from Lexington into the conversation. Dan, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Good morning. It's great to join you guys, John. I actually called twice with questions for your screeners, so it's great to join you all on the air. My question for our guests today, for Tony and for Trent, either of you that would like to answer, or both of you. I've heard a rumor often that the methane gas produced by these concentrated agricultural farming operations, factory farms, if you will, that is indeed more contributory to the human impact on global warming than the carbon dioxide and other gases produced by the burning of fossil fuels. So I just wanted to know if indeed this methane produced by beef farming is more harmful than, say, your common diesel engine.
Okay, Dan, thanks for the question. We're going to let you go while we get an answer in about a minute's time. So, Trent, why don't you give a stab at that?
Well, that's a good question. Methane is much more powerful than carbon dioxide for its size, but the amount of methane in the atmosphere is really small relative to the size of carbon dioxide. The amount of methane in the atmosphere, if my memory serves me correctly, is about 1.7 parts per million, and the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is about 398 parts per million. So it's a matter of how much is there.
Okay, and as we wrap up today's Eastern Standard Talking Weather and Climate, let me go back to the Weather Service for the latest forecast. Tony Edwards here from the Jackson Bureau of the National Weather Service. What are we expecting for the spring and the summer after this wild and crazy? And is winter over? Is winter?
No, winter's not over. It's going to come back as we head into March. We've had big snows in April, so winter's by no means over. But it does look like we will be warming up. And the big thing I want to get across is folks need to be prepared for severe weather, and especially if we do get into a warming planet, there's going to be more extremes. So be prepared.
Getting to be that season of the year.
Right.
Okay. Tony Edwards, thank you so much for being with us. Trent Garrison, thanks for being with us on today's Eastern Standard.
And really appreciate it.
We're grateful for both of you. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producers are Andrew Moorhead, Richard Turner, and Logan Riley. Logan produced today's show with help from Richard. Our technical director, Jonies Franklin, is off today. We're interested in hearing from you anytime. Thanks for tuning in to Eastern Standard on WEKU.